Hello and welcome to episode 78 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me as always...
Hello, I am Ben Chandler, also known as Ben 304, and, you know, whatever you want to call me. Just call me whatever. You can name me what you want today.
No, fuck it. I'm not going to make a Carly Rae Jepsen joke. That's just too dated and stupid.
That is... Let's see, that's quite an old song now.
Yeah, that's weird.
Well, I mean by quite old, I mean more than a year. Which in pop music is a long time.
I went to a wedding reception last week, and they played the Electric Slide, and it freaked me out. Because I was like, haven't there been more songs that have come out in the past, you know... 20 years or so? I mean, the Electric Slide's pretty old. It's like from the late 90s, isn't it?
So
why are you still playing it at weddings? That's like if you went to a wedding in the 90s and they started playing, like, disco music, which I'm sure they probably did. But you go to
a... Dude, we have Third Eye Blind Semi-Charm Life as the intro to our podcast.
Yeah, but our podcast is about adventure 90s games.
About 320 by 200 point and click adventure games.
Exactly. I'm not saying we're not at fault here. I'm just saying.
What are you trying to say? And you can't say it's because, it fits because our podcast is about retro thing, because I would say that getting married is a very old fashioned ideal.
Yeah. All right, fine.
Jeez. So let them play the Electric Slide.
Okay, fine.
You grumpy old goat.
But they also. they also played Blurred Lines.
I hate that song and I hate that man.
I hate them both too. And one of my neighbors. I don't know if you
that goat and gutto have the same letters.
They do. And I am now both, apparently. Yeah, I hate Blurred Lines too. And my neighbor who listens to music every single Saturday likes Blurred Lines, or at least it's part of their playlist. So I always hear the damn bass line through my wall at some point on stream.
I just don't like Robin Thicke.
Yeah, he's a despicable man. Anyway.
He's something.
We've kind of like...
You know what the worst thing is? You know that song he had where he's riding the bicycle about, you know, and I thought, oh, that's a catchy song, and now I listen to it, and it's about getting someone alone. I'm like, oh, that's gross. No, don't. No. Now I know it's by Robin Thicke, like, there's no benefit of the doubt there. I'm like, it's a gross song about gross things by a gross man.
Yeah, that's a thing. So this podcast kind of derailed before it even left the station today. It's been a while. How have you been? We haven't podcasted in a few weeks. What have you been up to?
Playing games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you asking, is this the what are we playing segment?
No, this is the personal, what's been going on, anything exciting?
We were kind
exciting.
Of unfaithful to each other, because we individually appeared on Squareways FM with our good friend Brian.
Oh, but, that's not being unfaithful, that's just helping a friend out.
Well, we've been unfaithful to our fans, I should say.
Oh, yeah, well, we've been unfaithful to Ponch. Apparently, Ponch got really upset. That's why.
I mean, what's he gonna do?
Yeah, I posted in the AGS forum thread when I was on Squarewaves, and I didn't post when you were on because Ponch had such a negative reaction to me that I thought, well, I don't want to get the poor guy's hopes up again.
Here's the thing: I actually talked about Bone Runner.
Oh yeah, you did.
Which is Ponch's game.
That's
for
right.
those of you who are listening, and shame on you if you didn't know that.
Yeah.
So I didn't want him to. I didn't want. Because cows have fairly big heads in general. I didn't want his head to grow anymore because I think that would be bad for him. So, Ponch, this is for your own good. I actually emailed him and was like, have I got the right game? Because it's been so long since I played it. Yeah. So I had to ask him.
I still have Barn Runner 5 Game 3 .rar
You should play all of... Barn Runner The Forever Friday, which is number 5. But it's... I don't even know. This is Ponch. I know you're listening, and this time this isn't even the normal joke thing that we do, the callback thing. I know that it probably seemed like a good idea, but having Barn Runner 5 chapter 1, 2, and 3 is confusing, okay?
Yeah.
And 4 actually. Just do them as a whatever. It's good. Barn Runner 5 chapter 3 is long enough to be a game by itself. Easily.
Well, okay, but don't tell other designers how to make their games. That's not nice.
That's the whole point of the podcast.
Oh, right, of course. Well, Man, my mind is blown.
What?
I just realized what we are. The mirror has been turned on us, and I see a hideous beast.
You are the least self-aware individual I've ever encountered today.
You know what I learned last night? I learned that there's such a thing as a house centipede. Do you know how?
Yeah, I've seen. Yeah. I've looked those up. They're interesting looking.
Yeah, do you know how I learned that?
How?
Because one fell right on me. Because I was... Apparently they like hanging up... Oh, here come the police to take me away for insect.
Mm.
So I had actually seen one earlier like a couple of weeks ago, just hanging out, minding its own business on one of the ceiling baseboards, I guess they're called. The trim around where the ceiling meets the wall. And I was like, what the hell is that thing?
I actually learned what that was called recently and I've forgotten.
Yeah, I did some detective work. And so I was sitting here on my computer last night, you know, about ready to go to bed. And all of a sudden, I hear this sort of plop sound. And I look next to me and it's a thing. And I'm like, holy crap. And I like got up and I went to get the bug spray. And of course it disappeared. So then I was like looking around and it miraculously appeared again on the wall. And I was like, ah, what the hell is that thing?
I don't think miraculously is when something hides and then doesn't hide anymore. I don't think that's a miracle. I think that's just something coming out from
coincidentally. Home. Coincidentally. Because, right. I mean, a little bug in a big apartment, well, it's not a huge apartment, but a little bug in an apartment this size, I wasn't expecting to see it again. I was just kind of walking around looking for it where it might be. And so right.
For me, miracles are something that really you got to suspend your disbelief.
Yeah, okay. A bug
that you saw once that's now back after 2 minutes after it went away. That's I can accept that. I don't. That doesn't call in a whole lot of faith questions or anything.
Yeah. Okay. I played Alan. I didn't play Alan, but I know. Anyway, I got you. Yeah, so I was like, Jesus, this is weird, because they're weird-looking things. I mean, they just look I thought at first it was just a really weird silverfish, because, you know, silverfish, they have the two antenna in the front and the three little antenna in the back, but this looked
they've got a little crucifix going on.
This looked like a long, you know, bug body, but it had, like, 20 legs all around it. So it was like this weird looking thing. So I was like, what the hell is this thing? So I went on Google and I was like, I've never seen a bug like this before. I'm going to look up New York bugs because clearly this is some sort of weird New York bug.
Okay.
So I Googled New York bugs and I found a website that talked about like the
which website was it?
Oh, I don't remember. I think it was something like identifyabug.com or something like that. I don't know.
Okay, because I've read a book by a guy that does a site called, I think, What Bug Is That?
Yeah.
And he gets a lot of stuff like that. And he talks about house centipedes and that he says a lot of people ask him about them.
Yeah. So I had never seen one before. So I was scrolling. So it had a list of bugs native to New York State. So I was just scrolling down, you know, and kind of thinking I wasn't going to find it because there was tons of bugs and they're listed alphabetically. And then lo and behold, I saw a picture and I was like, holy crap, that's it, house centipede. So I looked them up and I was like, oh, now I feel kind of bad for spraying it with bug spray because apparently house centipedes...
Oh, did you spray it?
I did. They're not only harmless, they're beneficial because they eat other insects. They eat spiders and they eat roaches. And I was like, holy crap, I killed the poor thing. So then I felt really guilty. Mm. I know, I felt bad.
I learned about them from this book, which I actually bought at the book grocer in Melbourne on a day when we both got very rained on.
Oh, yeah, sure. I remember your bug book.
Yeah, that was the one. Okay. That was by a guy. I think it's What Bug Is That? So, yeah, I learned a lot about North American bugs because there's a lot of North American stuff in there, but also some Australian things. And I love bugs.
Yeah. Well, apparently, I looked them up on Wikipedia. I don't like bugs. They're creepy. But I looked them up on Wikipedia, and they were originally native to the Mediterranean, and then they got introduced worldwide. But there's also a separate Australian species, of course, as there is everything.
Which probably has giant fangs and is probably...
Well, house centipedes they kill their prey with venom, so they are venomous. But I mean, they are so tiny that they're not a threat to humans.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that use venom that we can't be affected by. Thankfully, exactly. I don't like being injected with venom.
Neither do I. Anyway, so yeah, I guess that covers how we've been. What have you been playing?
I've been playing some stuff.
Yeah, it's been about three or four. How long has it been since we podcasted? Like 3 weeks or so. So
I can hardly keep track of my thoughts, let alone time.
Yeah, well, I can hardly keep track of the games because I've been playing a lot of games actually. But what have you been playing?
I started playing The Sims 3 again. Uh-huh. So I've been playing a bit of that. That sucked up a lot of time. And also, I installed Pillars of Eternity. Yeah. Finally.
Well, you've been playing...
Which I've had sitting there for a while.
I feel like you've been playing not that many games, but you've been playing games that take up a lot of time.
Yeah, that's it. I haven't played a lot of different games, but Pillars of Eternity, I've sunk some time into that, man.
Yeah.
Like, and I will say... How can I put this? It's not Baldur's Gate, but it's about as close as you can get to Baldur's Gate without being Baldur's Gate.
Isn't there a new Baldur's Gate coming out anyway? So
there is. There is. Siege of Dragonspear. Right. And do you know how I know it's Siege of Dragonspear? Because I wrote Siege of Dragonspear on a post-it note and stuck it to my monitor. Because I can never remember stupid fantasy names that people give their stupid things.
You know, that's funny because I listened to your podcast on Square Waves. By the way, listeners, as we mentioned, we each individually appeared on Square Waves FM. And Brian's a great guy, so go listen to those podcasts if you would like. I talk about game soundtracks. Ben talks about weird games. So should be of interest to most people. Yeah, I listened to your podcast and you mentioned how you don't like high fantasy and how they always have these names of like, oh, the puppet of Melchior and the wand of Bliggy Blue and stuff. I hate that too, and that's actually why I could never get into the Lord of the Rings. Like, I watched the first film, I didn't read any of the books, admittedly, but I watched the first film and I just couldn't wrap my head around, oh, the woods of Blandor and the riders of Flakion and all that, and I was just like, ugh.
So I think it's getting... I mean, it really depends for me. I love a lot of high fantasy games, and I've learned their lore and setting through being exposed to it, like, constantly, and, like, getting pounded over the head, but Pillars of Eternity is disastrous. Like, the name in it is disastrous.
Even the title!
Every time you get a sword, you just look and just go, oh, who gives a shit?
Even the title is like, Pillars of Eternity. It's like...
I commented on Twitter that if somebody had said to me 15 years ago, are you interested in Pillars of Eternity by Obsidian? I'd be like, dude, I've heard enough 1970s rock. Thank you, but I'll pass. Because that's what it sounds like. Like,
yeah.
The 1970s rock and roll was all about these fantasy... Not all about, but there was a lot of, like...
There was a lot, you know, of it, yeah.
Just a lot of it, and, like, you know, I like Hawkwind, but there's only so much you can, you know.
My God, I'm the evil one! Came and took a run away with her! Sorry,
You're not sorry. You don't give a shit.
I'm not. When I form my Led Zeppelin gibberish cover band, we're going to keep the lyrics to that song because, well, just that bit, because the rest is just going to be...
So anyway. It's not going to make a difference, really.
No. Well, that's what I've always said. I always want to make a Led Zeppelin gibberish cover band, and we're just going to sing all their songs in gibberish, and no one's going to be able to tell the difference, because it's all going to sound the same.
You just have to find a band that can play the songs, and I'm happy to have somebody gibbering like a monkey.
Are you
like
kidding me?
Do
you know how many Led Zeppelin cover bands there are out there? There's like a million.
Yeah, but I'm happy to have someone gibbering like a monkey at the front.
I'm not gibbering like a monkey. I'm gibbering like Robert Plant. Just...
And the difference is...
Let's not go there. Anyway, what else have you been playing?
But yeah, I will say this about Pillars of Eternity. It's got dungeons that you crawl through. It's got dragons that you fight. It's pretty much everything you wanted if you're a Baldur's Gate fan and someone's like, hey, these guys are cashing in on your nostalgia.
I know I've asked this question before, but do you actually crawl through the dungeons?
Well, no.
Okay. I want to see...
Do you crawl in a pub crawl?
You countered with the same question.
Did I?
I think you did last time
I
asked.
It's just a metaphor, dude. What it is a literary technique an image to mind.
If you go to enough pubs and you drink enough, then it's quite possible that you will only be able to have sufficient mobility to get around on your hands and knees like a baby.
Well, once you've sacked about three dungeons, you got that much loot that your pack will be weighed down that you'll be crawling back home anyway.
Okay, so that it makes sense in
yeah, same thing.
Context.
But yeah, so that's very good. I will say this... I'm finding the combat hard to read. I don't know if it's just because I'm not used to it, but compared to playing the Infinity Engine games, which is what this basically pays direct tribute to, it's really hard to understand what's going on a lot of the time, and you really have to pay close attention. I don't know if it's because everything's faster. It feels faster, and because of that, there's just stuff just happening constantly and really hard to keep track of. I don't know if there's that. And there's a million skills and spells that I just do not give a shit about. Like, there's just so much stuff. It's... Baldur's Gate was really nice, the first one, because it only let you get a few, like, you can level up like 7 times or something before the end of the game, which is nothing, and you just kind of, I mean, they've obviously extended that a bit with all sorts of patches and mods and things like that, but still, like, you didn't get that many spells and skills, and so they were all really important, and you learned to use them all. But there's this, you have skills the second you start, and it's just so much to try and get to grips with that. Even someone like me that's a real nerd for this sort of thing, I'm just like, just use whatever spells I got left. Who cares?
You know, admittedly, I haven't played a lot of RPGs, but...
And I think you've only played one of the format that I really like, that being Torment, which has... Yeah. You basically had one tough battle that whole game.
Yeah, but the only... Yeah. Of the RPGs I've played, the only one where I feel like the level-up system actually felt like it had a real impact on the gameplay has been Fallout 3 in New Vegas. Because...
Yeah, Fallout and Arcanum, that special system and that sort of thing, that's a good way of doing it.
Because even Torment, like, yeah, sure, you level up and stuff, but I didn't really feel like, I'm more powerful now.
No, Torment is a bad example because it plays like an adventure game, not a role-playing game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even still, if you know, it basically, like, the only difference was, okay, so I leveled up, I can assign some more points to my charisma, and now I have a new dialogue option.
You weren't even using spells. Like, you weren't even using your companion skills and spells.
Yeah, I know.
I remember when you were fighting, like, a battle that you were finally having trouble with. I think it was with Triss.
Yeah, and, that's the only one.
And I was like, dude, you should use some spells. You're like, I have spells? I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. You got really cross at how poorly
it was.
I
was like, do you know what it's like when you watch an adventure game and someone is trying to solve a puzzle that you know and it's right there?
Yep.
This is someone like, I was watching you. I was like the dad watching his kid play football, going, "No, idiot!" And I'm like, "Kick the ball, kick it!" And you know, so yeah, I was trying to teach you like an entire set of strategies and tactics in the middle of like combat.
Yep.
And it wasn't going to work. But thankfully, Torment is forgiving enough that you can just keep dying constantly and it doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
So I've also been playing The Black Cauldron.
Yeah.
I was talking with someone the other day about, I was thinking about Leisure Suit Larry, and I was like, just all of Allo's games I've played, I was just like, they're just all terrible. I even said to you on thing, I just do not like them. How do people like them so much? I don't understand his humor. It's not funny. His puzzles are bad. His stories are bad. His characters, I'm not a big fan of.
I was just going to say, we had a fairly lengthy and frankly eye-opening, for me anyway, conversation about the Leisure Suit Larry games and stepping back and thinking about all the humor that's in them is just, it's really vile, honestly.
You say humor, but it's not even funny.
Well, like, I say humor in air quotes. The attempts at humor are just vile.
Yeah, just pointing and laughing at other people and going, they're not like us.
Yeah,
So I was having an even much more lengthy conversation with someone else, with Pete, and she said, she was like, oh man, it sucks that nobody talks about his interesting games. And I was like, oh, Pete, I hate Torrent's Passage. She's like, no, I'm talking about Black Cauldron. Hmm. I was like, oh, no, I knew that Black Cauldron existed. It's not like Conquest of Camelot, where one day I just magically knew that there was this Sierra game that I'd never heard of because no one talks about it, because
you just
owned it suddenly. And I was like, hey, this is interesting. But yeah, I knew this was a thing, but I'd always just put it down as like a kid's game. I was like, I'm not interested in a kid's game. But I was talking to Pete about it. And so I was like, this sounds really, really, really interesting. I got to try this. Like an Allo game that doesn't make me want to punch my computer. That sounds good. So yeah, I started playing it, and I have to say, I expect it to be really easy, like EcoQuest. It's not at all. I got stuck for like 2 hours wandering around because I missed the room exit, and like, wow. There's action-y bits which are hard, man. Like, you gotta jump, and I've been save spamming a few times. I've restarted 3 times.
Holy crap.
It's a tough game, but I will say this, I'm really enjoying it. The control scheme is probably unique to this game. The only game that kind of comes close to doing what Black Cauldron does is Grim Fandango and Escape from Monkey Island.
Yeah, isn't it like a one-button interface where you have to just like press...
No.
Isn't it?
No, you've got one button for using and one button for using items and one button for looking.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember...
So it's 3 buttons.
I told you, I remember playing it a long time ago and I only played like the first couple of rooms because the interface was... clunky. I found it a little clunky and
like,
hard to get used to.
It's just like Grim Fandango. You've got one button for using, one button for looking, and one button for using items, and another button to go to your inventory and select the items.
Is the looking thing, like, position sensitive?
Sometimes.
Okay. Yeah, because
It's either room sensitive or when you get close to something, like the old, like all old Sierra games.
Yeah,
like
sure. It just seems like a weird...
And you press it.
Yeah. It just seems like kind of a weird system in an AGI game where the details are not as visible, you know? But I mean, if they make it work...
Well, because it's an AGI game, like, there's only 3 details on each scene anyway.
Oh, okay. Well...
You know, it's not like you're missing tons of things. There's, like, 2 trees in a bush in each scene. So, yeah, but I miss, like... I've restarted 3 times because there's some action-y stuff, and I kept failing this thing, and it was funny because I spent ages like trying to get this thing and I finally did it, and then apparently I learned that you don't have to do this at all, and that wasn't like it's non-linear, which is awesome. Gold Rush is also non-linear, so they were really pushing like the interesting ideas back then in the games that no one ever gives a shit about anymore or talks about.
Yep. And then like, King's Quest came around.
Well, I'm not... I think Black Cauldron was 87. When was King's Quest?
Well, I mean, I don't mean that it came after or before or whatever. I just mean that, like, King's Quest got... Was
yeah,
like,
people
hey,
really
this
got
our...
stuck into the either King's Quest or Secret of Monkey Island style.
Right,
I should say.
Well, I mean, with Sierra, King's Quest was their cash cow, so they were just kind of like, ah, screw non-linearity. Yeah. We know it works. Let's do King's Quest.
There's a bit of non-linearity in 6.
Yeah, that's true. I just thought that as soon as I said it, but yeah.
And there's a bit of non-linearity in 7.
Is there?
Yeah. I went to do a thing, and you're like, oh, I've never done it that way. Where you catch the little jackalope, whatever it is.
Oh, right. Well, that's not non-linearity. That's just multiple solutions to the same puzzle. That's a little different, I would say. But
well, it's a non-linear approach to solving a puzzle.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Anyway, so... Yeah. So I'm finding it interesting. Did you see some of the screenshots I posted?
I saw one that you posted, I think, or a couple of hours ago, where you're climbing up the side of a mountain with a rope.
Here, I'll link you one. Yeah, that was hard. That's like the hardest thing I've ever done in any game.
Really? What was it? What was the thingy majig? I mean, what? Oh, right, yeah, I saw this one too. Those crocodiles... Those crocodiles are the same ones from King's Quest, I think.
Well, there's 4 pixels. What can you? What? How much diversity do you want?
More diversity in games, thank you.
Oh yeah, I just linked someone else on Skype to it, and I know that I just linked that to Ivan. He's just on a smiley face, nice. So he doesn't realize I'm podcasting. But yeah, so I found some Charles Cecils in Black Cauldron. But yeah, so what the action bits are tough, but it's not like Conquest of Camelot where you're like, oh, I don't like sometimes with the jousting and fighting the Saracen, you like just have no idea what to do and you're figuring out. A lot of the times you know what to do, but achieving it's still very difficult. So thankfully, one thing I really like is pressing F10 or going into the game's like menu by pressing escape actually brings up actually changes the speed of the game, so if you're just walking around areas you know that you need to get through, you can speed up the game so you can walk through quicker. If you're at a tricky bit like that rope thing, you can actually slow it down and that makes it much more manageable. So, yeah, that's a very, very welcome option to what would otherwise make me probably give up. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. I hope I can finish it because it's a kid's game. And if I can't, I'll feel really pathetic. But I got stuck for like 2 hours just wandering around going, okay, I've used this on everything, I've used that on everything. So sometimes it's not always clear where you're meant to. Well, for me, maybe I'm just bad at adventure games, but you know, we'll see. The AGI model is something I haven't spent a great deal of time with.
Yeah, so. Well, it's fine. Anyway.
What have you been playing? Because I've talked a lot.
I played a lot of games. I have played a lot of games, so I'll be hard-pressed to remember them. Let's see. I know I played... I replayed Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis of weekends ago. And I've already talked about it on other podcasts. Sorry, baby. but I didn't
feel... I
didn't
give a shit.
Oh, okay. Well, fuck you then. So I
love you. Aww. Don't think this is something that it's not.
Aww.
It'll turn into a, like, that soap opera thing.
Oh, wait, what soap? You mean a soap opera?
One of the crazy ones that you showed me.
I'm
going to stab you with scissors.
That's beyond. No, you have to scream and slap me while I fall over in my wheelchair.
Dude, we've done that all this year already.
What?
Nothing.
When did you slap me and have me fall over in a wheelchair?
Oh, clearly you don't remember. That's good.
No, clearly I don't. This was...
Come on.
Anyway, so...
Let it go.
Don't start singing Frozen songs, please.
I don't know them.
Good, I don't either. Anyway, so I played Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, and as I
mentioned...
Yeah,
you didn't enjoy it that much, you didn't say.
Well,
you did say.
Overall, I still enjoyed it, but I realized how there's bits towards the end, and bits in the middle, too, to be fair. I mean, there's... Talk about non-linear. I mean, there's, of course, the three-path system.
Yeah.
I did the teen path because, I don't know, I like Sophia. But I think my favorite path is actually the wits path, from what I remember. I don't know, my nostalgia might be fooling me as well as it did this time. But yeah, I mean, I just feel like the game kind of falls apart a little bit once you actually get to Atlantis, because it introduces some stuff that was not present in the other parts of the game, like backtracking and like, if you forget to... There's a couple of inventory items where you use them and you think, okay, I've used them, and then it turns out you need them again, more than once in some cases. And if you forget to pick them back up, then you have to go back all the way to the beginning. And, I mean, Atlantis isn't huge, but it's built like a maze, so it kind of takes a while to get around it. So it's kind of annoying when you get someplace and you're like, oh, crap, I have to go back all the way to the beginning and get this again. And you have a limited number of orichalcum beads, and if you run out of them, you have a machine to make more. But if you've already gotten to the inner ring and, you know, you have to go back outside to get more lava, to get the ladder again, to put the thing, to get... It's just like mountains upon mountains of just tedious slog that you have to get back through, and that's not fun. So it gets a little frustrating. And I know that you can save spam before you use your orichalcum and, you know, whatever, but it's just... No, I don't think you should be able
to... I think it goes to show, like, how much we've been accustomed to not having to be patient with our modern games.
I mean, I don't know about if it's just...
I noticed when I was playing The Secret of Monkey Island, like, I've always liked The Secret of Monkey Island, and I replayed it after not touching it for, like, 10 years, and I just wanted Stan to shut the fuck up. Like, I was like, dude, just shut the fuck up. If there was a fuck... And I'm a patient guy, usually, but I just... Oh, man, just... Go away. I was like, I want to replay the second game now just so I can trap that bastard in a coffin.
No, wow.
Like, and you know, like, I was still quite happy to do, like, the sword fighting.
Yeah, sure.
That wasn't too bad, but that's definitely a thing where you know, you're waiting to get the next two insults and you're doing the same insults over and over.
And if you're a perfectionist...
A lot of those games really did rely on you being patient.
Yeah. If you're a perfectionist like me who always wants to get the full roster of insults...
Yeah, you want
to
get all of them. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, that way you're guaranteed to win against the Swordmaster if you do. So.
Yep.
Anyway, so that was that. But overall, like I said, it was still an enjoyable experience. I hadn't played it in... probably about 10 years or so, yeah. So it was good to see it again.
And I wanted to get it running on my DOS PC, but I couldn't get the sound playing nicely.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I know.
So I'm going to try it on my Windows one.
Yeah, Scum VM, it works fine. One thing I did notice, which I pointed out to you that I thought was kind of funny, was that there's a background at the beginning where it's obvious that they didn't finish a little bit on the bottom left corner.
Yeah,
because they figured that the status bar was going to be covering it for the game, but during the opening intro, when there is no status bar, it's like once you see it, you can't unsee it. And there was a couple of bits too that like. I think they use deluxe paint for it, and most of the backgrounds are beautiful, but there's a couple of bits, like especially in like in the university, where it kind of looks like there's JPEG artifacting going on just because of the blend of colors and textures on the walls and stuff, which is I think
it's just a limit. It's just them working within the limits of the color range they're allowed to use.
Probably. That reminds
me. I've tried making the 256 color scenes myself.
Yeah.
And it's trying to get it to not look like a shitty internet image is really hard.
Yeah, no, I used to do the same thing when AGS, actually before AGS went up to being able to use 16 and 32 bit when you had to use 256 colors. Which you just reminded me of a tangent that I want to go off on. And that is that I'm sure you're well familiar with this, but I've seen people on the internet talk about like adventure games and modern adventure games and stuff, and a lot of people are always like, oh, I don't understand. Well, we've beaten this horse to the ground, so forgive me, but it just irks me when I see people talk about AGS games and they automatically assume that the reason that we do them in low resolution is because it's somehow a limitation of the engine, and it's not. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
But I'm pretty sure
everybody who's listening
already knows
that, to be honest.
I know, but
So I don't know what value you expect to get from saying that, but that's fine.
I want our listeners to be aware of the ignorance pervading the internet and go out there and fight it and say...
Are you kidding me? No. That's the ignorance on the internet that you want them to be aware of?
Well...
Dude, talk about setting low goals.
That's the ignorance of the internet relevant to our immediate... interests that I want them to be aware of.
I don't know. I'm a human being. The ignorance of the internet in general is relevant to my immediate interests just because I'm immediately a human being.
That's true. But
there's something we all have in common, listeners. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, there's some ignorance on the internet that just isn't worth engaging with the ignorant about. Whereas this one, I think, you know, people can be educated and shown the error of their ways and hopefully, you know.
I think I'd like to think that everybody can be educated. If we just take the time to try and understand.
Well, moving on from the Feel Good podcast, I also played Her Story.
Don't say anything because I want to play it.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really cool. I talked about it with Brian because he very nicely gifted it to me on Steam. It was really enjoyable. So if you like, it, you know, if you like a nice, interesting little game that'll take you about 3 hours at the maximum to play, check out Her Story. It's FMV done well, and
that's a phrase I never thought I'd hear.
Well, I mean, technically, I guess it's FMV in the sense that, I mean, obviously, it's the whole gameplay just involves you watching video clips, so it's not like, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really good, and I enjoyed it. What else did I play besides that?
You played Anna's Quest.
I did, but that's the most recent thing that I played. I feel like I played something else in between that I'm not remembering. I replayed Dishonored.
Dishonored. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed it again. And I actually did a run to get a trophy that I was missing, which is playing it without upgrading any of your powers. So that was an interesting challenge to play. But I did it, and I finished it, and I enjoyed it again. And I was like, holy crap, we stole so much from this game for Shardlight. It's not even funny.
Sure.
It didn't...
Are you suddenly aware of this? I knew from the get-go.
Well, I knew, but I didn't exactly realize the extent to which we had done it. I hadn't played Dishonored since 2012. All my save games previous to this were from 2012. So I was like, man, I didn't realize just exactly how much we borrowed from this game.
It really worries me how unself-aware you've become, because I'm like, the whole time I was like, well, we're making the Dishonored plus Fallout, the adventure game.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, well, now I know.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, Techno Babylon, I was totally making Deus Ex the adventure game. That was my whole goal.
I know. So that was enjoyable. I loaded up Batman Arkham Origins recently because...
Gross.
Why gross?
No, I've played enough Batman. I actually have to say, after playing Arkham City, I was like, I don't know why I bothered. I should have just had played Arkham Knight and Arkham Asylum. Sorry, there's too many. A new word up.
I know. I still want to play.
I was like, one of those was enough for me.
Yeah, I still want to play Arkham Knight. But the reason I loaded up Arkham Origins is because there is a game mode. In addition to New Game Plus, there is also a game mode called I Am the Knight, which not only does the game play in like ultra-high difficulty level, but you only get one life. And if you die, that's it. You have to start all over again. So my goal has been to try and finish the game from start to finish, and it's not been going well. I had tried doing it a while back. I hadn't played in a really long time, so I picked up my save game from the last time. 'Cause, I mean, obviously, if you quit, it saves your game. It doesn't, you know, it's only if you die that it resets. So I was like a fair way into the game, I think. I was not halfway through, but I was pretty well in. And, like, I got into... It had been a while since I had played, so the first fight that I got to, I died, and I was like, oh my god, I just totally lost my entire save game. I have to start from the beginning. So I started from the beginning, and I didn't last very long. And last time I played, which I think I've tried like 3 times this week already, and the other day I got about 2 hours in, and then I died, and I was just like really frustrated. So this is like a personal challenge to myself. I'm gonna see if I can finish I Am the Knight mode at some point without going insane.
See, that's exactly how I feel about, like, the RPGs and the old games that people are like, oh, man, how can you be so patient with it? I'm like, this is a challenge to me. I really enjoy the challenge.
This is me basically doing a solo run of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, that's it.
So, yeah.
Except I did... I will probably say that the solo run of Icewind Dale is the hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if I picked the wrong class or something, but there were points where it was really too easy and points where it was just impossibly hard. I honestly didn't think I'd be able to finish that, so...
Well, see, I get enjoyment out of that. Like, I like games that have New Game Plus and, like, super ultra hard mode because I like the challenge of it.
It's interesting to me that people will happily redo the same battles over and over again where you're just punching boring shit, like, constantly... But if you get a Walking Dead in an adventure game, you're like, oh, I have to start over. It really frustrates them. I really want to know what the difference is.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. Man,
because
I remember...
To me, punching through 6,000 Batman thugs, or Joker thugs, whatever they are, is the most boring idea possible.
Well, there's more to it than just punching. I mean, obviously...
I know, I've played two of the games.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, man, I remember...
It's the same with Assassin's Creed. Like, you do the same four mission types over and over and over. Happily stick with that over and over. And I'm like, why?
Assassin's Creed doesn't have a super hard mode, though. I don't think it could really fit in that type of game. But anyway, I remember when I first played God of War 2 back on the PS2, and it had...
That's the one I've played.
Yeah, it had Titan mode or whatever, because the first one had God mode. And... Man, I think I spent... There was one... Remember, you know the battle with... Like, it's pretty early on. The battle with Theseus on the horses, where he has that big spear thing, and then there's, like, the ice that shoots at you and all that?
Kind of. My memories of God of War are the bits where you whip the horses.
Yeah, yeah. It's right before that.
Right, okay.
It's the boss battle right before that. And it's fairly early on in the game. And, man, in Titan mode, I swear to God, I spent literally about 2 weeks trying to get that battle, and it was such a good feeling when I finally... Because, you know, that battle ends with Kratos, like, smashing his head in the doorway, and you have to press the circle button to smash the door, which is horrible and brutal and terrible. But after spending 2 weeks on that battle and finally beating it, it felt so good to do that. And then I was about myself.
If you'll spend 2 weeks on a single battle, which to me is...
Well,
I'll do that in a role-playing game, I guess, right?
Bear in mind...
Here's the thing.
bear in mind that God of War came out in 2007. I was much more patient back then.
Okay, but here's the thing. If you get stuck in an adventure game puzzle, use a walkthrough. What's the difference?
I don't know. Well,
where's the difference lie?
I guess it's because in a battle, if you are stuck on it, it's because you die and you have to restart again. Whereas in an adventure game, if you get stuck on a puzzle, you're just kind of stuck wandering around with no real input from the game. At least, you know, if you're still as repetitive as it may be, at least if you're still punching guys or you're doing that again, you're at least trying to get to a goal by way of
That's why you walk around the game and you examine stuff and you talk to people and you're like, what have I missed?
Yeah, I guess, but it's much more passive in an adventure game, and I think it's much easier to run out of patience if you are in a lull and you're just kind of like, well, I'm just doing this, rather than if you're in an action.
See, I think for me, in an action game, like, I know what you're saying, it must be true because everybody is this way, like, it's very rare that thing, but in an action game, I'm like, oh, I missed that up. Whereas in an adventure game, I can make a mental checklist. I'm like, okay, well, I've tried that, that didn't work. I've tried that, that didn't work. It's the same in a role-playing game. If I've got a big battle, I build up a set of strategies. I formulate a plan, and that didn't work, so now I'll try this. Actually make checklists.
Yeah, but the thing with adventure games, too, is that sometimes, I mean, and this is completely dependent on the specific game's design, but sometimes you'll find that an action that didn't work before suddenly has a different effect because of something else that happened, you know, as part of the sequence to solve the puzzle. Whereas, you know, so you might think, oh, well, the reason I missed something is because, you know, I didn't, like...
But that's a very, very, very specific case.
Not as specific as you would think.
But it doesn't explain why you just stop the way you give up and look up puzzle solutions in general.
I guess.
Doesn't. And then you go, oh, you tell me, you're like, oh man, I could have worked that out.
Yeah.
I feel stupid for not getting that. I'm like, well, you could, if you'd spent another 14 minutes, you probably would have got it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I spent 2 hours walking around in the Black Cauldron because I couldn't, I missed the room exit. And I felt stupid once I found it. But to me, that's two hours is still more interesting than punching Batman thugs. Because I'm wandering around a cool place.
Well,
you're
wandering around a cool place in Batman. It's Gotham City. But anyway, we can debate this till the cows come home, and it won't get us anywhere. I've also been playing.
Dude, it's 10:53 p.m. The cows are home.
All right.
They're all put away for the night.
Okay. Well, what boring cows? They don't go out to their cow club.
This is an interesting alternate reality we've entered, where cows are party animals.
Well, they are animals.
True, but party animals? They're herd animals. Anyway, what were you saying? Anna's Quest, it's good.
No, I finished Star Trek 25th Anniversary, which I don't remember if I had finished it.
Oh, you should talk about TLC.
Oh, God.
You finished that?
No, I didn't. I still haven't finished it.
Oh, okay, but you've been playing that. You've been telling me small things about it.
Oh, God.
Which has been enough, to be honest.
Well, yeah, I finished Star Trek 25th Anniversary, which is not that great a game, and started playing Judgment Rights, which is infinitely a much better game. Jess agreed with me after, like, the first hour of Judgment Rights that it was a way better game than 25th Anniversary. But
okay,
so that's good. So we haven't finished that yet, but we're almost finished, and it's interesting to see the missions towards the end that I had kind of forgotten about that are fun. So also I've been playing Dreamfall Chapters Book 3, which I don't know what to think yet. Like, I like
you the, sound torn, Francisco.
I am torn because, as I've mentioned before, I don't know that the whole slow start in an episodic game works. And now that the story's actually starting to ramp up, it's starting to get interesting. But it's starting to get interesting, like, I feel like, towards the end of the third episode, where it could have been interesting before that, you know? And there's a section... What really frustrated me was that the very first section... Like, we were stuck literally for an hour on the very first section of Book 3, which the only puzzle is wander around this three-room house looking for drawings. And
it sounds like Edna and Harvey, The Breakout, except that's one room.
Yeah, well, and the thing is that, like, you're playing as this kid, and the dad is like, "Oh, I'm so sick of all your drawings. You're messing around. You know, you mess up the house with all your drawings lying all over the place." He should have said, "Oh, I'm sick of finding your drawings hidden all over the place," because they're really hidden. It should not take an hour to find 8 drawings in a 4-room or 3-room house. That's all I'm saying. Anyway.
Okay. Man, it took me 2 months to find my television remote last time I lost it in one room.
Well, but that's different. I've been in your room. Your room's pretty messy.
It's not now. It's nice and tidy.
Oh, good. Okay, so yeah. And yes, TLC. So I've been playing TLC. Playing in air quotes. And the only funny thing about TLC recently, that because the way it works is basically it's a DVD game, and you play it on the TV, and like you pretty much like navigate around a house kind of like The Seventh Guest, but a little less interactive. And like there's all this crap you can find and read, and like it basically it's adult, so all these things are about like their sex lives and blah blah blah, and it's really, really boring. And I laughed because there was this whole extensive book about the secrets of the tantra or whatever, and there's like this whole essay about the yoni massage, and I was like, why am I reading? Why? I feel like I'm 12 years old on the internet googling like, how do I please a woman? And it's like,
well, you're the one playing TLC. I'm pretty sure you knew what you were getting into.
Listen, I'm playing TLC under duress, okay? I will go on the record and say that, and I'm sorry, Jess, I know you're listening, but it's true. So basically the whole thing of this game is you wander around the house and you read a few things, and then it's like, oh, go to this room and take this personality test. And then it asks you a whole bunch of weird questions while looking at paintings, and then you get a little bit more of the story. And the story is dumb. And like there's this whole big, I'm not spoiling anything by saying that it's very obvious from the beginning that the parents are grieving their dead daughter, but the mother is obviously in denial about the daughter being dead. And you never see the daughter, and the father always reacts to this, that the fact that the daughter is like, he always like brushes off any comment she makes about the daughter. So it was obvious within like the first 10 minutes that this was a thing. And the game tries to present it as like this big twist. And there's this whole dramatic bit where the guy's walking up the stairs and there's this opera music playing, and he finally goes into the little girl's room and he looks over and the bed is empty, and it's supposed to be like, but the game actually asks you later on, it's like, true or false, I knew Jody was dead. And I was like, of course I knew fucking Jody was dead. Are you kidding me? But what made me laugh was there was one question. Because I don't know if the game is trying to analyze the characters or you or what, because it asks you questions about both and like what the characters are thinking and stuff, which is a good segue into our topic for today, which I just realized we're almost at the hour mark. This is going to be a long podcast.
It'll make up for the weeks that we've missed.
Yeah, that's true. Let's not let it get to Square Wave's length, though. Okay. Yeah, anyway. I got nothing going on except work, but anyway.
My cat's going to want to go out at some point, so I'll have to get up and put him out, but, you know.
Don't be a slave to the white beluga.
I just don't want to shit on my carpet.
Oh, fair enough. Anyway.
That's all.
So one of the questions of one of the paintings was, true or false, I don't like looking at art because it makes me depressed at how untalented I am. And I was like,
Have you learned things about yourself playing this game? Has it been a revelatory experience?
No.
You never know, this might be very good for you, Francisco. I think this will be a good experience for you.
I don't know, I'm pretty sure I know myself at this point. I mean,
I don't know. There's always hidden depths lurking there.
I don't know.
Who knows what dead children lurk in your past?
Oh, God.
Worst thing I ever said.
I could
and
say...
that's saying something.
Listen, I could say something infinitely worse, but I'm not going to.
Oh, well, I mean, even if you don't have anything to say, everyone's now curious, so well done.
Yeah, exactly. See, I'm adding some depth there. I'll tell you after we finish, if I remember.
I don't give a shit. Say what you want.
No, I mean, I'll tell you afterwards, so it's not on air, so I don't have to edit it out. Anyway.
Why would you have to edit it out? Because no one listening... If there's people listening to our podcast, put up with Leisure Suit Larry and the other shit from the 90s. They can handle anything you can say.
No, I don't. I want to preserve a sense of professionalism. Anyway, moving on. I also played Anna's Quest, which was lovely, and all of you listeners, go out and get Anna's Quest, because Dane Krams is not only a nice guy, but he's a good game designer. He was on our podcast talking about art several
And being on our podcast
ago.
Basically makes them important, so do it.
Yeah, exactly. But Anna's Quest is genuinely a really lovely game. I had never played the original Chapter 1 Escape
Oh,
the
really?
Room
no,
game.
I played the original and loved it.
Yeah, well, I liked it a lot, and I just thought it was really refreshing to see a game that, I mean, if you look at the screenshots, it looks really cute and kitty and you know, fairy tale. And it is. But it also has a really dark story, which is refreshing to see in a game like that. And, like, the ending is actually really kind of bittersweet. And like, the whole last chapter just completely turns everything over and sheds new light on things. And I really love it when games do that. And, yeah, it was really cool. And I liked it.
Knowing Dane's taste in, like, films and stuff, I have very, very high hopes for it.
Yeah, it's actually really good. That being said, I will say that a couple of the voice actors got to me a little bit.
Have trouble with Daedalic voice actors, I gotta
say
that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like their usual stable
voice
actors.
Is this the first Daedalic game you've played, by the way?
Yes, actually.
Wow.
I played a demo for one of the Deponia games, but this is the first full Daedalic game I've played, yes.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if, I don't know if it's, like, their usual stable of voice actors or whatever, but there was a couple that I was just like, eh. I mean, the girl that played Anna, at first I was kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with this, but she grew on me and I liked her. But there's one voice actress, and it's clearly a woman playing little boys, and she just, there's not really much variety in her voice, so, like, she plays one fairly important character, and then there's a couple of other important characters that are little boys, and they have the exact same voice. So I'm just like, well, okay, this is kind of confusing, but whatever. I will say that it is a very beautiful, very pretty game. Dane is a very talented artist. There's one animation in particular.
An animator, I will say. He's an amazing animator.
I just wanted to say there is one animation in particular that I've adored. And I kept watching it over and over again because it's nothing particularly special in terms of what the animation is. I mean, it's literally just the character appearing and disappearing. But the little details that go into it, I just adored it. So much, and it's like it's a very dark animation too, actually. I don't want to spoil it, but I mean I can't wait for you to play the game so I can talk to you about the animation.
I think there's a really skilled animator or a really imaginative and loving animator can make even a very mundane animation look really good. There's an animation at the end of the second Ghost in the Shell film where one of the characters picks up another one of the characters, and as he picks up the character, he sort of disentangles her foot from like a cable that's been wrapped around it, and just to see a person picking up another person being done with such attention to detail is incredible to me. I love it when you see something really simple done so like carefully.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, play Anna's Quest, you won't regret it.
Do it. Do it.
Good.
I will. Gave me a copy.
I did.
Thank you.
So now you have no excuse. You're welcome, but you have no excuses now.
Now I gotta try and get it downloaded, so.
Well, it's about 1.4 gigs, I think. It's a big game. But
no, I'll wait.
You'll get there.
So I got a good day and I'll try it.
Yeah. Okay, so we're almost at the hour mark, so let's get into our topic. And our topic for this week is character development. Now, the reason I want to bring this up is because I came to a self-realization recently, and that is, despite the fact that I've been making adventure games and designing and writing adventure games for about 14 years now, I have never really sat down and considered character motivations as much as I should. And I think that is a detriment, because obviously, when you play adventure games, like, I realize that I've come from, like, the old school of playing adventure games, like the old Sierra games and stuff, where a lot of times the characters were just kind of blank slates, or NPCs were NPCs more than characters. Like, LucasArts had characters in it, obviously, but a lot of the times they were comedy games, so they were, like, you know, exaggerations of personality types and things like that. But one thing, and I know Dave and Wajidai have focused on this quite a bit, is the idea of, you know, character motivations and expressing those things in adventure games. And I've learned quite a bit about things you can do to help make your characters more well-rounded. We're actually working with a narrative consultant on Shardlight now to kind of come and tweak the dialogue and fix things and make the characters more well-rounded because of that. And it's really been an interesting experience for me and for, you know, for the game, because I think it works way better with actual characters rather than things. Than, you know, one-dimensional or even two-dimensional
things. Than things. Yes. Playing a game where there's things talking.
Exactly. So I want to talk a little bit about that, about the importance of character development, and kind of give some suggestions for people who might want to think about how to go about making more interesting characters in your games and things. Because there's world building, but I think that character development falls into a separate category from world building. Because obviously, you need to have your characters react to the world, but you have to establish the world first. And I think especially with Shardlight, I was concentrating a lot on the world building and not so much on the characters, which is why we have to, you know, we have to think about that now.
Well, wait, physically, I mean, I did up a set of, like, questions of stuff I want to know when I draw a location. So,
right.
And, you know, Dave said to you, I want you to do up a Bible for the world. So we had
forced you
into that sort of zone where you go, okay, I really got to think about this world now because these people are asking me, what's this world? I got to come up with answers. I think it's useful to be put in a situation where answers are demanded from you because you then have to create the answers that you might not have created before.
Right, exactly. And it's the same concept with characters. So you came up with the idea of the questions, like, you know, what kind of neighborhood is this? What people live here? What's the day-to-day thing? Like, is there some sort of, like, hierarchy in this neighborhood or whatever? It's the same thing with characters. Like, we did some character exercises the other day, and basically, it was, okay, let's talk about this person. Even the most minor of characters, like, let's say, for example, let's take a game. Well, let's just do a hypothetical. Let's say you have a game where your main character goes to a store or whatever and talks to a cashier. Like, it's very easy to just have that cashier be a cardboard cutout and, you know, just not really, just serve their purpose of, like, oh, I am a quest giver, I am an NPC, whatever. But if you really want to make your character memorable, you want to think about their personality and their traits and things like that. So we asked sort of questions like, would this character be late for dinner? And if you think, okay, well, yeah, they would be late for dinner. Okay, well, why? Because they usually don't get home until late because they're at work. Oh, okay, well, that means they're a hard worker. Bam, there you go. There's one personality trait that you've established. What would this person's last meal be? And you think about that, and you say, okay, well, why would this be the person's last meal? And you sort of have to draw a connection to why that is. Like, maybe this cashier's last meal would be a hot fudge sundae. Well, why would it be a hot fudge sundae? Because they really like ice cream. Well, why do they really like ice cream? Okay, well, because when they were a kid, they really liked ice cream. Okay, so eating a hot fudge sundae would remind them of their childhood, and they really wish that they had that innocence, you know? And it's like this, it's an interesting slippery slope sort of thing to reach a conclusion about these characters. And you don't necessarily have to sit there and have these characters tell you their whole life story. Obviously.
Sure.
You don't want
and
it to be the longest
story. Rather than overcomplicating it, sometimes it's nice to just have somebody eat a hot fudge sundae because they're just a gross person that likes eating trashy food like me.
Well, yeah, and like me. Oh, man, I had the best caramel frappe yesterday. I told you about this. Anyway, but just to give an example of like how to make that sort of thing shine through, like I'm not going to spoil anything, but I'll keep it ambiguous enough that I won't spoil anything for the listeners, but you'll know who I'm talking about. So there's a character in our game right now who has gone through quite a big...
I know who you're talking about.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know?
I know this guy.
Well, you're right about the gender of who
I know who it is. I know who it is.
How do you know who it is?
Don't deny. that I'm
Be serious, won't you?
Come on, get on with it. I'm right and I know it, and you know it, so let's go.
Alright, so this character has been through several iterations, and most recently, this character was subject to the design. And so, there was this really... There's one line in the game that that is now in there that subtly expresses one of the things about this character that I thought was pretty well implemented, because it just, it's a little thing, but it tells you that it expresses that information without having the character explicitly tell you this is what I'm all about. So in the character exercises, another question is, what is this character's dream job? So for this character, I said that yes, they would be late for dinner because they're always out doing naughty things, and they come home to dinner late. Naughty in the sense of pranks, right?
Right, right.
So that gives you that this person has a sense of...
I was busy fucking, where's my food? Oh, that's the worst voice I've ever done.
It's pretty close to the worst voice you've ever done.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the what would this person's last meal be? I said pepperoni pizza, because this person liked... like pepperoni pizza at their birthday party, and it reminds them of their childhood when things were nice. So there you go. So this person is a daydreamer and wistful and thinks about the old days. And what would this person's dream job be? I said pilot, because this person has never seen a plane and likes the idea of being able to fly. And, you know, it's a post-cataclysmic world, so obviously there's no planes. So that would be something interesting to this person.
So he's never seen a plane, but he's had pepperoni pizza.
Well, he had pepperoni pizza when he was a child, but he was too young to ever...
He didn't see planes when he was a child.
Well, he's read about them and seen them in books, but he hasn't flown on a plane. And he's never, you know... He was too young to appreciate planes. But anyway, the point is his dream job being a pilot is not something that gets expressed through dialogue, but there is one item that you look at, which, not to spoil things, but it's a drawing, and, or several drawings, and the player says, oh, these are nice drawings, and the character says, yeah, my favorite's the one of the pilot. So, bam, there you go. This person now instantly has something to them, you know?
And well, they have a favorite thing. I think that's important.
Right, right. And that favorite thing, you know, you as the player don't necessarily have to know.
They have a reason for the favorite thing.
Right, they have a reason, which isn't necessarily, it doesn't have to be communicated in the game, but at least it gives them more depth than just, this is a person who, whatever. They have some reason for having this favorite thing. I wonder what that is. And, you know, at least you can, you know, say that about them.
I think sometimes we get worried about making characters weird because we think, oh, it's going to be turned into a comedy game with wacky characters, but people are weird.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, a lot of the times when Dave and I were saying, oh, we'd like this character a bit more fleshed out and stuff like that, you say, oh, I'm worried that it won't be subtle enough. I think you can be pretty not subtle and still get away with it. Rosa Blackwell's a pretty big nerd and there's not much subtlety about it, but she still feels believable.
I had a lot of fun with the dream job thing, because obviously, you know, everyone has their dream job. I had one character's dream job, bearing in mind... I wonder if you'll be able to guess which character, if I tell you what their dream job was, if you'll be able to know which character it is. I'll make it easier for you by saying that these two characters are in the same room, but one of them I said their dream job was to be a personal trainer. And the other's dream job was to be a ballerina dancer. So anyway, and those particular things are not expressed, but there is something like the personal trainer that leads to the fact that they're not particularly happy with the job they currently do have. And so that comes across in their dialogue a little bit, which gives them some depth. And the ballerina, she doesn't have, you know, that doesn't particularly come out in her character, but it does lend to the fact that she likes to dance. She is, you know, lighthearted. She has a sense of humor sort of thing. You know, the weirdest things can lead you to think about a character's personality. And
I think it's interesting, like, the things that you're naming, like ballerina and personal trainer, are not things that exist in the world, so they're actually thinking about the old days a lot. Like,
exactly. That was a challenge, too. Don't get me wrong. That was a challenge, too. Like, the last meal thing, you know, or what's their favorite food? It's like, there's not a lot of options in our world.
Stick.
Right, exactly. It's not, there's not a lot of options here because of the fact that our world is as such. But thinking outside of that and not necessarily saying, okay, well, this is definitely what their favorite food is. Because obviously they're not going to say, boy, I really wish I had a pepperoni pizza right now. It's just more what that
Nobody
represents.
Nobody in that game talks like that.
No. And it's funny, actually, because I was talking with Dave.
That's a rule.
No, no, no.
A law.
No, but here's the thing. It's, and I was talking to Dave about this yesterday, is that the character in question, our pilot pepperoni pizza loving friend, in the early days when we would do playthroughs and, you know, I'd watch you play and you'd read out the dialogue, you would do a funny voice for this character.
Sure.
And yeah. And it was and Dave's like, it's really telling that you guys would do that because it seems that you weren't taking this character seriously. And I'm like, yeah, and I feel that this character is at a point right now where you wouldn't do that voice because
he's a real person. I probably encourage you to write this character a certain way by doing dumb jokes when I didn't mean that. I was just being an asshole and like having a fun. Yeah. It's fun to do silly voices, but
well, the dumb
know,
there's still.
I wonder if that influenced you.
Yeah, maybe there. The dumb jokes. There's definitely still dumb jokes in there because
sure. It's
part of the character's personality. And I was very happy that those got left in because I would have been very sad if they had been taken out. But yeah. So, as a second, I've been talking a lot. Do you have any input?
I think there's some important stuff. Like, I talk to Dave a lot about this sort of thing because Dave's got some very interesting stuff. One thing I think that Dave said to me, and I've read elsewhere, is it's important to allow your characters to be wrong. It's important to allow, especially your protagonist, to mess up, to make a mistake, and to have that be a pivotal part of the whole proceeding, you know? It's easy to get very attached to a character and go, oh, no, this is who they are. They wouldn't do that. But sometimes it's important to show the cracks and, like, this is a character I really like, but maybe they messed up.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that's the important part of fleshing them out.
Yeah, it's definitely important to... That's another question when you're thinking about, you know, you can say, well, what are three adjectives to describe this character? What are their faults? What are their positive attributes, you know? And it's important to show those faults, I think. Now, I think it's a little tricky as far as, like, from a gameplay perspective for your main character, because if you...
Nah, not really.
Well, it's fine to have a flawed main character, but as a player, you don't want to fail. So if you show the character failing outside of your control, I think it's easy to create a sort of disconnect. Like,
I disagree.
Well,
look at Rosa Blackwell. The whole first part of the Blackwell Legacy is her trying to get into her apartment, and
yeah. She's
like too awkward to like be that sort of person. The whole challenge is created as a result of her flaws.
That's right, but a lot of players...
That's very interesting to me.
Dave has told me that a lot of players didn't like that and complained about that, because you as the player are being blocked by the main character, who is basically you by proxy. Then in Ben Jordan 8, there's a bit towards the end where Ben is searching for an item and he goes through this really stupid block, puzzle to get to it. And, you know, some guy comes down and Ben's like, oh, here, you should hold on to this for safekeeping. And the twist is that he accidentally gives it to the enemy who's pretending to be a good guy, right? So, you know, he's being dumb there. He's failing. He's not, you know, whatever. And a lot of people complained about that because it's like, well, why would he be so stupid to do that? Okay, because he misjudged. But you as the player at this point are so invested in this character that you think, oh, well, I know what I would do in this situation. Why isn't the character doing the same thing, you know? So it creates that disconnect.
I also think that's not really a result of Ben's flaws so much. It's just he misjudged the character.
Right.
You know, like, if Ben had a serious flaw, like, he's afraid of something or, I mean, flaw's a weird word to use for being afraid of something, but if an inability to do something because of a certain thing, I think that actually lends depth to a character.
It does, but I think when it becomes an obstacle, It can be done well, and it can be done poorly. Sure. Like if you have a character who's afraid of spiders, right? And they fall into a room full of spiders, and there's something on the other side of the room that they need to
escape. What is this, a David Cage game?
Yes. Yes. Let's not David Cage it up. Let's make it a little bit more plausible. Okay, so let's say that there's something a character needs on the other side of the room, and there's a couple of spiders in the way.
Right.
And the character is deathly afraid of spiders, and they won't go in. They won't go anywhere near the thing that they need because of the spiders. Now, this becomes an obstacle, obviously, because you have to deal with the spiders. So, if the player absolutely refuses to go and get the item because they're afraid of the spiders, okay. Now, it could be done interestingly in where, like, the player sort of has, like, a psychological moment to themselves and they overcome their fear. Or it can just be, oh, this is the puzzle because your character is afraid of spiders.
Well, I... Okay.
You know.
I don't know that I agree entirely with you on that. In fact, I probably don't agree with you at all. But
well, tell me
I haven't thought about it enough. This is new information for me to think about. But yeah, I think in a story, a character should definitely have flaws. Otherwise, they don't seem like a character. They seem like a sort of golden hero image. Like, oh, it's Superman. Well, I mean, even Superman and Batman rely on their flaws in the comic books.
I'm not saying a character shouldn't have flaws. In fact,
it's part of the challenge.
Right. No, well, I agree that characters should have flaws, but I don't... I think it's very tricky to establish those as a challenge and an obstacle in an effective way.
Oh, I think it depends on how you present it. Like, I mean, Batman's number one biggest flaw is that he won't just fucking kill the Joker. If he just killed the Joker, all of his problems would go away, except for the fact that he wouldn't be who he is anymore.
Right.
So I think... Yeah, no, I think you're being a little bit too dismissive of using a character flaw as an obstacle, because I think it's important. But yeah, so I think character flaws...
No, it's just, like I said, it just has to be an obstacle that doesn't seem convoluted and stupid.
Well, that sums up every adventure game puzzle, dude.
Yeah, I know, which is why I hate adventure game puzzles.
Okay, you're in the wrong genre.
I know.
But yeah, I also think a character should be ground into the setting, like really, really ground into the setting. It should react to them, and it should have their roots tied into it. I played the start of Shardlight recently, and it now really feels to me like our main character is a part of this world, just because the conversation makes it sound like she knows the area, which is important. You know, she knows the area, the people know of, if not her, of her roots, of her origin. That's important. That's really important. One thing I really like about games like Loom, you look at Loom, the whole thing is like the Age of Guilds, you know. You have these areas and the people, and their who they are is defined by where they are, what they do. It's not just, oh, this is the guy that makes the glass. This is the whole city of the glass. I love stuff like Conquest of Camelot. I talk about Conquest of Camelot a lot because I think it's King's Quest done right, except for the annoying fighting bits, you know? King Graham, in the games that I've played, or Alexander, or whoever I've played as, they don't feel like kings or royalty or even part of the system.
No, they're feel not. Like
they're not. Whereas King Arthur, you start the game, you're not just like some guy with a stupid owl. You get money from your treasury. You get a horse. You get a donkey or a mule or whatever it is. You know, you go around and people recognize you. You're not going out into the world as a sole king hero because you have no knights. You're going out because your knights have failed and you have to rescue them. And the test isn't, oh, restore the you know, get the Holy Grail. The real test in Conquest of Camelot is about Arthur overcoming his selfishness and, you know, giving the antidote to, I forget who's who, but, you know, and forgiving Lancelot, who is, you know, King Arthur knows that Lancelot's going behind his back with Lady Guinevere, and if he doesn't forgive him for that and act as a king should, then you can't finish the game, which is really beautiful to me.
Yeah.
So I really think that when you've got a character that feels tied into this world, and I was talking with Pete about Quest for Glory 4 recently, which I haven't played but really want to.
You really need
and
to.
Will.
Yes.
Yeah, good. But there's this whole thing where people start recognizing who you are, and you get a reputation, and that's so important
that
for me.
That is my favorite part of Quest for Glory 4. Let me tell you right so now. When you watch this, here's the thing about Quest for Glory 4, and this isn't going to spoil it for you, but you will. That is easily by far my favorite part of Quest for Glory 4. You walk into the village. You start off in this cave, and you come out of the cave, and the first place you walk to is this village. And of course, the cave is a local landmark that everyone's afraid of, because, you know, you learn about the history of the cave and everything while you play the game. But the first person you meet is the burgomeister of the town, and he's like, "What? Who are you? What are you doing here? We don't have any..." And obviously the swamps have cut off the mountain pass, so they don't have any new people coming into town. So he freaks out about who you are, and like he's like, "Well, what are you? You're a stranger. We don't get strangers. We haven't had new people come in." And when you talk to him, he's like, "Why are you lying to me? Like, why would you expect me to believe that you came from the cave and that the cave would be open? What are you talking about?" And so he immediately doesn't trust you. And like you go into the inn, and the townspeople are all in the inn, and they kind of like all look at you funny, and they're civil, but you know, you talk to them, and they're kind of like, "We don't like strangers," you know, and it's not done in... I mean, it's kind of done in a comical way, but it's not like, "We don't like
it's
your
cop." It's Quest for Glory.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the friggin'... The three townspeople, they go off script like crazy in the voice version. And they do really bad impressions of, like, Jack Nicholson, Rodney Dangerfield, and someone else. But I mean, they're still, you know, they still get the message across. It's like, you know, they don't like strangers, whatever. They're kind of like, "Okay, well, you'll probably leave, whatever... or die, or, you know, we won't have to worry about you too long." But then, as you, like, go meeting more people, like, they're hostile towards you, but then as you start doing good deeds, they kind of start, like, warming up to you, to the point where, like, the burgomeister, like, you know, in the Quest for Glory games, you haven't played three yet, have you?
I've played a bit of three, but I didn't stick with it for long. This was ages ago.
Okay. Well, you know how when you click the mouth icon on yourself, you have, and there's a character around, you have the option to greet them and say goodbye and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always like that. I always like really being polite in the Quest for Glory games, and I always say hello to people and goodbye when I leave the screen and stuff. And it's a nice little touch where the first, you know, when the Burgomeister doesn't trust you, he goes from basically when you greet him, he's just kind of like, he just kind of grunts at you, or he just is like, "Oh, what do you want? I don't like strangers. I'm suspicious," whatever. To, like, he becomes your friend. And he's like, "Oh, good to see you again. Oh, take care," you know? And that transition from the town just, like, fearing you and thinking you're this horrible stranger to actually, like, liking you and stuff, that is, like, one of the coolest parts of that game, easily. Because you feel like...
That's a very... I won't say common, but I've seen that done a lot in role-playing games.
Yeah,
like that's a thing that I'm really used to.
Okay. Well,
you know, you see people whose lives have gotten better as a result of your actions, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really see that as much in adventure games, and it's because Quest for Glory has RPG elements in it, obviously, that you do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like, but it's cool because, you know, Mordavia is this, you know, it's a scary, harsh land, and it's actually genuinely frightening to go out at night because the landscape changes and, you know, there's all these horrible monsters and stuff. But just to have, like, you know, you get there and the town is this, you know, place that shuns you. So you're in this scary land and people hate you. But then you get this little oasis of like, oh, well, the people actually like you. So even though the place is still dangerous and horrible, at least, you know, people like me.
Yeah, but going back to character development,
yeah.
I think if you can make the character feel a part of the setting that way...
Mm-hmm.
Then what you really do is you not only develop the character by simple interactions, but also the world.
Yeah, sure.
Which is really, both of those are really important to me. And obviously, characters are the world. The world exists for these characters, mm-hmm. and the characters exist in this world and because of this world. And it's important to make the two tie together.
Yeah, absolutely. But it also, like I said before, it's important to... make that distinction and make sure that you're not ignoring one for the other, because it's...
Well, of course.
Yeah, if you have one weakness in one aspect, then it shows. One thing that's interesting that we did the other day while playing Dreamfall was Jess had me analyze characters and tell me what I gleaned about them from the interactions with them, and I realized that I really have to stop and think, beyond just saying stuff like, this person is nice, this person is helpful. Like, just looking and analyzing them and seeing how, like, how they dress or how they speak or what items they have around them. Like, there's one character.
Yeah, the stuff in their home, you can tell a lot about a person. Like, it's like Gone Home.
Yeah, there's a person who was drinking tea, and I'm like, well, she obviously likes tea. Well, why does she like tea? Okay, well, it's because she's obviously refined and high society, and she drinks tea because, you know, she likes the finer, she has a taste for the finer things. Okay, well, that tells me a lot about her, you know. That sort of thing.
I think it's also what people do in their spare time, because a lot of the times when we're on a quest, we don't really get to see the characters in their spare time. I've said it before, but I think part of the Ben Jordan series is when Ben and Alice and Simon meet and they just listen to Led Zeppelin at night or talk to Led Zeppelin, whatever they do. It's that good, I don't even remember it. But yeah, there's like, all of a sudden, I don't feel like, oh, I'm going to explore paranormal things because it's an adventure game. I feel like, hey, there's three like-minded people chatting and being friends.
Yeah.
That's important to me, is to give people this spare, like, this time off of the main quest of getting the cup of who gives a shit, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's really important to let them be people. Because if you talk about someone, if you try and describe the people that you know, if you're like, oh man, what do you know about, you know, Oliver? You're not going to say, oh, well, he works in a bank and he's good at it. You're going to say, yeah, he works in a bank, and then, oh man, you want to see this thing that he built in his backyard? It's crazy, you know? And yeah, he really likes dogs. He's crazy about dogs. He's got four of them. That's the stuff that makes a person who they are, not what they've done or what they do so much.
Right.
Well, that's part of it too, obviously. But yeah, to give them that sort of, you just think about how you describe your friends.
Yeah,
and you
exactly.
wouldn't just be like, oh yeah, they. What do I say about Francisco? I'm not going to go, oh, he makes games and he lives in New York. That's about the laziest summary of a person you can give. You want to make it like, you want to try and sum up the person.
He likes ice cream.
Everybody, well, not everybody, but everybody. Everybody, I don't think I know anybody that dislikes ice cream.
I want to say I know people who don't like ice cream, but. I don't know. I can't remember because it's so shocking and horrifying.
Did you excommunicate them from your life?
Yes, yes.
Anathema to you?
That is a requirement. If you want to be friends with me, you have to like ice cream. So if you don't like ice cream, sorry, you're out the door. Bye.
Well, I keep those people around because at an ice cream party, there's more ice cream for you.
You make an excellent point.
I've thought a lot about ice cream in my time. Yeah.
Have you fallen down as a result? Anyway, so if anything, dear listeners, I recommend that you do what I did and think about your favorite games that you've thought about. Because, I mean, there's plenty of old school adventure games and even modern adventure games where the characters are relatively flat. So think about a game that you played where you really found the characters memorable, and think about what it is about those characters that makes them memorable. Think about what you know about those characters, and then think about how the game tells you that or shows you that.
And I think the thing about how they tell you that is also a really important part. Communicating with the player is really important. You can't just assume they're going to notice things.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, you know, don't do, and I'm sorry, Ragnar Tornquist, I know you listen, but don't do like The Longest Journey did and have the character sit there and tell you their life story, because dialogue, I mean, we've talked about dialogue. Dialogue should be as short and as snappy. And Jennifer, the lady who's helping us with the dialogue consulting, or the narrative consulting and the dialogue editing, she says all the time, dialogue shouldn't be any longer than a tweet. And that's
interesting.
True. Yeah, it's true. So, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, one sentence or one bit of dialogue shouldn't be longer than a tweet. If you have things to say, you know, take
it. I wonder if I agree with that or not.
But yeah, I mean, try and keep your... People don't... When you talk to someone, they don't generally ramble on and on and on and on unless they're you and I on this
you
podcast.
You are really the least self-aware person I've ever met. Wow.
Are you saying I ramble on and on and on?
No, I'm not. I was implying something completely different to that.
I don't ramble on and on and on. Do I? Do I bore you? Wow. How do you describe Francisco? Oh, he's...
He talks a lot of shit and he won't shut up. And he makes adventure games in New York.
And he cries when you tell him things that are wrong with him.
What the hell? Anyway. Well, this is entertaining for everybody.
I'm sure it is. Anyway, yeah. So yeah. If you want to, that's a really good advice. I think.
I'm curious about the dialogue being no longer than a tweet. Is that how do you mean? Can you clarify that? Because that doesn't make sense to me right now.
Okay. Well, a tweet is 140 characters.
I know that bit. I tweet more than you.
Yeah, I know. But I'm sure this has happened to you because it happens to me plenty. You have a thought you want to get out on Twitter, and you write it out, and you realize that it's more than 140 characters. So you have to trim it back, and you have to sort of actively think about how you're going to fit it in that 140 character limit, right?
But that's not what I do in natural conversation.
No. You don't actively think that, but when you're writing dialogue, you have to stop and think, okay, well, this is the message that I want to get across that this character is going to say, but I need to trim it down so that it still sounds natural, but at the same time gets the point across without being more than 140 characters. Because you can have dialogue that's super flowery. I mean, that happens to me all the time. I tend to extend my dialogue. Like, if you have a character saying, oh, well, I need to go outside because... Or I don't like going outside because when I go outside, people laugh at me and they think that I'm fat and ugly and I want to stay indoors and play on my computer
Dude,
all day.
Dude, nobody talks like that. I'm telling you right now.
Nobody talks like that, but that's the general sentiment you want to get across, right?
Okay.
So a person could say, like, you ask someone, well, how come you don't go outside? Oh, well... You know, I prefer not to because I don't like it when I go outside and it's not comfortable for me. You know, whatever. That's rambly. Just say it's not comfortable for me. You know.
But some people ramble, like genuine people ramble.
No, generally people do ramble. I pointed out several episodes ago. I watched The Trip, the Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon thing.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where an old man comes up to him and starts just talking to him about the history of the place he's at, and he really doesn't care. Yeah. And he's trying to politely get away from him. And I thought that was a very real moment because, yeah, you have people who do that. Who just like,
yeah, that's exactly. I know people like that. I know people that I've been in the car with the engine going, winding the window. I knew a dude. His name was Mozzie because he used to hang around everybody. Like, his name was John, but everybody called him Mozzie because he'd hang around. And he wouldn't piss off and
like
make noise. Yeah, a mosquito, like Mozzie. Everyone called him Mozzie. And he would drive, like, you'd be driving down the road, and he would swerve onto your side of the road to block you off, so that you had to stop your car, then get out, come around, and, like, start talking to you.
Wow.
So, like, this is... And some people are genuinely like that, and that's interesting. I've just got an interesting story that I just told about a thing that a person did, and I used to go on the opposite side of the road, so he and I would pass each other going opposite sides of the road because I didn't give a shit what he had to say. But that's interesting. And he used to fall asleep while he was driving and crash.
Oh, my God. Is he still See with that? Us?
Yeah, he's okay. Alive.
Good.
And he hates his wife.
Oh, God. Well,
but that's the thing. That's a very real person. That's what people do. So I'm wondering this character not talking more than a tweet. It feels very, very limited. I mean, I get that for snappy dialogue. That's a thing. But sometimes snappy dialogue might not always be relevant.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule, of course.
I agree.
I'm not saying that you have to keep all your dialogue like that. Obviously, if you have a character where they're going to talk a lot and that's part of their character, then by all means. But, you know, within their sentences.
It just felt like it felt like a nice thing to say as a guideline, but to keep it as something as practical use, I'm having trouble considering that. Well, when I tweet, I don't tweet like how I talk. And dialogue, you want it to feel natural, right?
Yeah, of course.
So, I shorten stuff for tweets all the time because I'm a long-winded piece of shit.
Right, so that's the point. Like, you know, if every single character in your game was long-winded, it would get pretty boring pretty quickly.
Have you played Piss?
Not for a while.
Right.
But I was going to name another game, but I don't want to be mean.
No, I've got plenty of... Man, I'm the worst for writing really, really wordy stuff.
Right, so maybe you should think about turning that back. No, of course it's important. But at the same time, you know, also think about trimming it back just to make it more...
It's something to think about, yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like any guideline, it's something to think about. You shouldn't stick to it 100%, like any guideline. But
no, the way you're presenting it before, it seemed to me like you're saying this is how you should do it.
Okay, no, well, forgive me if that's how it came across. But no, this is something you should consider. And I think it works better for it.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. Less is more, as they say.
Yeah, sometimes. It's really easy. I know myself as a novice writer to, like, you've got all these ideas and you want to tell them all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes you can tell them in other ways, but, right. You know, I haven't written a game in 2 years or something like that. Not a decent-sized game or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, to me, the project that I had that I was experimenting with a bit, I mostly was doing in the form of text messages, which was interesting. So that was interesting to, like, try and write stuff that would fit in a text message and make it as short as possible but still convey a message. So that was an interesting experiment, and it still is.
Yeah, having to work within a limit like that is definitely an interesting way to be creative. But, yeah. Again, yeah, don't impose a limit on yourself just for the sake of it. Just, you know, but consider the fact that people might not be as long-winded as you or I.
I remember you telling me about an early game of Dave's, because Dave is the most person against long dialogue now, but he was the worst. Like, back in the day, he was just, like, that was his thing. And I remember you saying that he was showing off, I think it was a demo of his run game, and he was just, like, skipping hours of dialogue.
Yep.
Yeah. We all change, I guess. But, yeah, it's interesting that, you know, now, if Dave sees a long-winded thing, he's instantly like, oh, cut it, it needs to be shorter. Yep. He's the number one guy for that. So it's interesting how people change.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's just the whole character development thing, too. Like I said, I was used to adventure games where basically the protagonist serves as a more or less avatar for the player, and they don't really have too much of a personality, and their motivations aren't necessarily, established aside from... This is the game. This is what I have to do. So having to think in those terms has been a challenge, but I think that games are more, are stronger for it. Like,
I think...
Look at King Graham. What's King... What is King Graham's motivation? Okay, in the fifth game, all right, it's saving his family.
Save Daventry and... Yeah.
Well, it's not even save Daventry. It's save his family and his castle. Okay.
Right.
All
right,
so he loves his family and he loves his castle, I guess. How does that really come across aside from him going, my castle, my family?
Yeah, he doesn't really, it's not really established through the game. Alexander's motivation was really hard for me to get grips on in King's Quest VI simply because he's in love with a woman that he met for 8 seconds.
Alexander is a stalker, basically.
Yeah, and but if you look at, like, you know, I've realized recently that the Sierra games that I like that not many other people talk about is the ones where you actually feel like the character's got motivation.
Yeah.
King Arthur's got motivation in Conquest of Camelot, you know. Jared Wilson in Gold Rush, he gets a letter from his brother. He's not just going on some weird quest just because he wants to be a hero. His brother sends him a letter. That's awesome.
Right. So, I mean, that. But even look at that. Look at King's Quest V. Graham is... He is motivated to find his family and his castle. And what does he do? He goes around a town and buys custard pies and kills Yetis. And,
that's right. The gameplay doesn't really match at all with his situation.
It really doesn't. It's like, you know, he should be more urgent to, you know, he should... So what if it's a poisonous snake? He's a king. He used to be a knight. Why doesn't he just get a sword and cut the snake's head off and continue on into the mountains? He wants to find that The thing, the castle, the family.
I feel the same way about King's Quest VI.
Yeah, well,
like you've got me trying to save like this thing from the bad ruler guy, and I'm helping
this
a book
thing.
Find
it's
a
woman.
What a stupid.
Yeah, exactly. The gameplay in these games doesn't really match. I mean, what is
it's very twee?
Yeah. Well, look, Leisure Suit Larry's motivation is that he just wants to have sex. That's terrible.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's not terrible, but it's...
No. Isn't his motivation that he wants a wife?
It varies from game to game.
It's looking for love in all the wrong places.
That's the second game. The first game, his goal was to lose his virginity, and then when he loses his virginity, his goal becomes find someone that he actually cares about to have sex with.
And so I can get behind that. That's really cool. That's a great story.
Sure, but the way it's presented is terrible.
Well, so, it's out low.
Yeah. The second game, yeah, he wants to find love. So it's actually Larry 2 is the game with the least amount of random sexual, well, it doesn't have any random sexual encounters, I don't think.
Well, there's the woman on the ship that whips you.
Yeah, but you die if you
Yeah, it's a random sexual encounter. And no, there's the one that you can get into bed with and a brother or boyfriend or something comes along and gets you.
I'm talking about random sexual encounters that are relevant to the plot and, in fact, required by the plot to continue. Okay. So, yeah.
I don't know, I never finished Larry 2 on account of me not liking shit games.
Yeah, well, anyway, so he does find love at the end. But then in the third one, he gets dumped on again and then he decides he's just going to go back to having sex again. And so he does, and then he meets Passionate Patty, and then he's like, oh, I like Passionate Patty, and that was supposed to be the end of the trilogy. Like, he was supposed to stay and, you know, but then he made more. And then in Leisure Suit Larry 5, he's basically just, like, doing a shit job, and Passionate Patty is getting fucking power tools up her gooch. And then, I just wanted to say gooch. And Lennon 6... I think six is easily the most offensive Larry game, not just because of the plot and the jokes, but also visually it's pretty offensive. I mean, have you seen the neon color palette on that thing? But six is basically that. He pretty much is looking for the perfect, he just wants to score. That's it. Each woman is a quest. You have to find the right object, you give it to her, and then she dumps on him. And then finally he finds the one who's a virgin, and then he deflowers her, and then that's it. That's literally the plot of Leisure Suit Larry 6.
Okay.
And then 7, again, he just... Yeah, it's basically that. But 7 is somehow better, I think? I don't know.
I don't know, I haven't played it yet.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think 7, the first and the last ones are the ones I haven't tried.
Yeah.
Which is I play games in strange orders, it would seem.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But anyways, yeah. And look, Roger Wilco. What's Roger Wilco's motivation? He bumbles through the whole thing. So, yeah. Okay, what's Guybrush Threepwood's motivation? He wants to be a pirate, and then he wants
to
get the girl.
Originally, and then Elaine comes along.
Yeah, and then he wants to get the girl. And then in the second one, he wants to find the treasure. And then in the third one, he needs to sail, you know...
To make up for his stupid mistake.
Right, exactly. And then in the fourth one, I don't even know, because the fourth one doesn't exist.
But... There's the gubernatorial seal. That's the game that introduced me to the word gubernatorial. I just love the word gubernatorial. It's so good.
I'm aware of that. You've said it quite a lot already.
Well, I've said it 3 times.
Hey, ready? Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Gubernatorial.
Yeah. All right. Anyway.
Feels good.
It does. It feels gubernatorial. So, yeah. Think about your favorite adventure games and think about the characters' motivations and think about the characters, what makes them them. Like, Full Throttle's a great example because Ben, you know a lot about Ben. He doesn't say much, but you know about him. He's a tough biker guy. He likes being out on the open road. He doesn't want to be restricted. He enjoys his freedom. He doesn't want to be tied down.
He doesn't like putting his lips on things.
Yes. He likes kicking things. And his motivation is basically he's loyal. Because obviously he's loyal to his gang.
Well, he's got a sense of duty because he's the leader. Right. As well, I think. You know.
Right.
And he's also loyal to his ideals.
Yeah.
like when a business proposition gets asks him to sort of, you know,
to sell out for the sake
to sacrifice his ideals for the sake of financial stability, he's not interested.
Right. Even though it's, you know, it's the company that he loves, the product of.
Yeah.
This is something that you should look at, designers, and take the advice of someone who has no idea what they're doing.
It's interesting to see, like, the sort of things that you're thinking about now.
Yeah.
Having had this sort of feedback and discussions with other people recently, to see what you've taken away from it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's something that I'll definitely be considering way more going forward. In fact, my next game, I've decided that I'm not even going to even start thinking about the story until I establish my main character and those that are more important supporting ones.
Yeah, that seems fairly important, sure.
Yeah.
Kind of done that thing where a game for me evolves from a character and then a location, and I think, okay, well, what would they do?
Yeah, well, for me, it's been the opposite, really, because obviously all my other games have more or less taken place in real-world locations. Shardlight's the first game where I've had to actually build a world from scratch. And so it's easy to kind of just mold a real place to fit your story and then kind of put characters in it. And even with the Ben Jordan games, like, Ben's primary motivation is just solve the mystery, you know? So it kind of was easy to get away with that sort of thing. But... you know,
because the player's curious to solve the mystery themselves, so you don't have to have quite so much character motivation.
Right, exactly.
Because Scooby-Doo, you want to see who's behind the mask.
Exactly. Whereas with A Golden Wake, that would have benefited greatly, I think, from a lot more character development. Not just for Alfie.
Yeah, I mean,
but
we know Alfie Banks' dream job. He wants to be the mayor.
Right.
Like, that's told to us. So, you know.
Yeah.
There's some... That's the stuff that I like the most about Golden Wake, is stuff with his brother, and stuff where he's not happy about working.
Right,
the stuff where he's just going around solving puzzles for people, it's hard to see why he's doing that.
Right. So. Right. And I'm aware of that now. I mean, yeah, but...
Oh, sure, so, we all learn.
Yeah, we do.
Hopefully,
yes. Anyway, you anything else to add, or shall we wrap up? This is a long
podcast. I do have something to add.
Okay.
I've been doing some background characters for Shardlight recently, and I had a really weird revelation, which shouldn't be a revelation. It's weird to me, because at first I just wanted motion in the background. I thought, oh, this will look more like a city
if there's people walking
past. Yeah, I thought there'll be more like a city if there's people walking past. So I started doing these walk cycles of people walking past, and, you know, different weights and heights and races and ages and gender, you know, just sort of spice it up. And then I thought to myself, hang on a minute, these are people. They're not just going to be walking past. Some of them are going to be holding things. Some of them are carrying things. Some of them are going to, like, you can tell straight away when a woman is carrying a child past, you think, well, okay, that's a mother. That already tells you a big part of that character's life just from that one added detail. So to me, even background people have, you know, it's important to develop them a little bit. So yeah, it was a really weird revelation for me that I could actually make people have chores.
I have to say that was a pleasant surprise when I loaded them into the game and I saw the lady carrying the baby and the lady carrying the jug and the guy with the clipboard. I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like,
it's actually...
I don't think I've seen this before in an adventure game, to be honest.
The weird thing to me is that I had never thought that that would be important. And then I did that, and I'd done some characters carrying, like, just, like, produce from the market. And I was like, hang on, at least one of these people is going to be a mother.
Yeah.
You know, so to have that realization, which seems like a very unimportant, very... sort of trivial thing. When I see the one going past with the kid in her arms now in the game, I'm like, oh my god, there it is, that's the best.
Yeah.
That's like the greatest thing. It's so weird how little stuff like that can add to a character. It tells you a little story about that character that before you never really even considered.
Well, not even...
You know, before it was just a person walking past.
Yeah, not even just the character, but the world too.
Yeah, this is a real place with people giving birth. They've got hopes and dreams and, you know, and they're trying to... It feels human to me.
This is a real place where people fuck.
Yes.
I can do this creepy voice, too.
Mm. I think mine was creepier, but...
Probably.
Don't know.
It's something I can only aspire to.
Don't.
Okay.
Anyway, that's just a little addendum I'd throw in there.
Good. Good. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to our podcast, as usual. I hope...
Sorry for the delay, and glad hopefully to be back.
Hopefully this extended length will make up for our shortcomings of... frequency.
I was thinking about the word shortcomings. I'm so immature.
You know that's why I said it, right? That's why I said increased length and shortcomings. I plan what I talk about. See, it's all part of planning dialogue. To get a reaction from my player. Whatever that means.
Ew, player.
Anyway. So you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Grindislav Games.
I'm at Ben_304.
And together, we are...
At BCT_podcast.
You can subscribe to us on iTunes.
Do it.
And, I would plug my appearance on the Backseat Designers podcast tomorrow, but this is going to be up probably only a couple of hours before that happens. So if you happen to be around at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, go to the Google Hangout and listen to Backseat Designers because it's a good podcast. Also listen to Square Waves FM because that's a good podcast, and Upper Memory Block because that's also a good podcast.
Oh man,
podcast.
I wrote him an email. I wrote Joe an email about Baldur's Gate because he is going to talk about it soon.
How long was the email?
I think I kept it to a couple hundred words.
Okay.
I wrote a letter the other day, and in the middle of it, there's a 1,000-word essay about culture, history, and politics in EGA adventure games.
Jesus Christ.
I'm a sad person.
Is it... Did you write this letter for who I think you wrote this letter for?
Yeah. Dude,
That's what I was going to ask.
I'm not going to write a letter to my grandma about DOS adventure games. I should.
It's kind of you to provide this lengthy reading material, if anything else.
Yeah. Anyway. I had a lot to say.
Yeah, fair enough. So thanks for listening. We'll hopefully be back next week. If not, we'll be back at some point in the future.
We'll be back whenever the hell we want.
Yeah!
Punch. Nah, he's all right. Play Bone Runner.
That's right. All right. Bye.
Bye.